Once again, we're delighted to welcome you tonight. We appreciate those who are able to join us for this evening worship service. We're glad to have that opportunity, and we hope that God will be glorified, brethren will be edified as a result of what we do in this place. I think all of us are quite aware, we should be aware, that we are living history right now. What is happening in the world around us will be something that people will be talking about and studying about and evaluating long after the people that are in this auditorium, every one of us tonight, are long gone. This sort of circumstance that we see happening tonight is unprecedented in our world, at least in the modern era. We see things going on that remind me a little bit of the concern and the riveted focus that people had on the events surrounding 9/11. You remember back in 2001, those of us who were alive then, a lot of our young folks were not, but when we had the tragedy in New York and in other places in the northeastern part of the country where our country was attacked, everybody's attention was on that, and it took weeks and weeks for people to think about anything else. But that was a one-day, one-time event, and then the aftermath that followed that had to be dealt with. And we are still, in fact, dealing with some of that due to some of the military kinds of operations that are still ongoing in the world in which our country is engaged as a direct result of what happened on September 11, 2001. But what has happened in the last several weeks is something that is not going to be a one-time, one-day, one-week event. This thing is unfolding in ways that none of us would have ever predicted. Would you have thought a week ago or 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago? Even when you might have remotely heard about the beginnings of this virus in another part of the world that migrated to our part of the world, would you have ever thought about some of the things that we're seeing today, some of the things that are occurring? I would tell you that there are a lot of people right now, and I hope that I'm not talking tonight to anyone who is so terribly distressed that you're panicked over it, but I think that we live in a world where there are a lot of people who feel like there's no one in control, that this whole thing is out of control, that it is just something that no one is going to be able to do one single thing about, and we just are at no one's mercy whatsoever, that whatever happens is going to happen, and there's nothing whatsoever that can be done. I tell you, when people feel like there's no one in control, that's a dangerous thing. And whenever we get to the point where we think that there's nothing we can do, or we get to the point where we feel that we are just victims, that we're just helpless people who have to take whatever comes without any response, because whatever response we make is of no value whatsoever, well, that's not a good place for you to be in your thinking. When we stop and think about it, control is an enormous issue. It's always been an enormous issue. I doubt that you could name a sector in our society in which control is not a major consideration. Control is a major political issue, isn't it? Who controls the White House? Who controls the House? Who controls the Senate? Who controls domestic policy? Who controls economic policy? Who controls the governor's office? Who controls state policy? Who controls the city? Who controls the county? All those things are always on people's minds, aren't they? Who's going to be in control? Who are we going to allow to make choices and decisions for the society of which we're part? Control's a major health issue. Who controls the direction of our nation's health system? Who controls the doctors? Who controls the hospitals? Who controls the pharmaceutical companies? Who controls the insurance companies? Who controls my doctor and tells him or her what kind of care I can or cannot receive at their hands? All of those kinds of big questions are things that we wrestle with every day, right? Control is a major issue in congregations. Do the elders of the church control the church? If they do, what do they control? Do the preachers control the church? If they do, what do they control? Do the members control? What do they control? And on, the whole concept of local church autonomy is really an issue of control, isn't it? Who is it that's going to make the decision for this church as opposed to another church? If you'll just stop and think about the fact that for the last 3 or 4 decades, the overriding issue in the lives of the individuals that we're most familiar with is all about control. When we discuss protecting my rights, what are we talking about? Control. When we talk about my freedoms, or someone intruding into my space, or if we're speaking of people asserting my or their independence, what are we discussing? We're discussing who controls us. That's what's on our mind. And so tonight I really want to just talk about who's in control. And especially in light of the fact that so many people think that no one is in control, and that all that's going on in the world around us in the last few weeks, but you could have preached this sermon a month ago and the truth would be the same then, and a year from now, 2 years from now, the answer to that question is still going to be the same question. There may be marriages that are troubled because of control issues. There may be, in fact, parent and child relationships that are in trouble because those involve relationships that have someone in control. A basic issue causing major problems in personal lifestyles involves questions of control. It's all about who's in control. That's just so. It's just so in every society. Somebody has to be at the helm. Somebody has to be in charge, we may say. Well, in being a godly person, the question of control is settled for us because we have a sovereign. I just hope all of us stop and recognize for a moment tonight that God is very much in control. God has not abrogated His authority to anyone else. He has not stepped off of His throne. He has not turned His back. You know, the deists, many, many years ago when deism was very popular, had the idea that the great God of the universe created it all, yes, but He put His mighty hand on the globe, so to speak, and gave it a big whirl and then walked off and left it. And it will last as long as His power allows it to spin, but He could care less about what goes on planet Earth. Let me tell you that God very much knows what's going on planet Earth. And God also has a perspective on this that none of us have. The oldest person among us, if we should find somebody that would live to be 120 years old, has only a speck of perspective compared to what God has. You think about all of the famines and all of the flooding and all of the flus and all of the viruses and all of the tragedies that have befallen planet Earth since its creation, and God has seen every one of them. And He has managed the human family through all of those circumstances, and He has been in control of this universe. And let me tell you that when this universe one day is on fire, it will not be by accident. It will be because God is in control. God is not setting aside His role and His responsibility with His creation nor with His creatures. And we need to keep that in mind. We have a perspective on that most people in the world simply do not have. They do not understand that we serve a God who is aware of what's happening in our lives. They don't understand a passage like 1 Peter 5 and verse 7 that would say, cast all your cares upon Him, for He cares for you. Most people don't think anybody cares for them. That if they don't care for themselves, nobody will. That nobody will be interested in what happens to them, one way or the other. And so they must be only interested in themselves. But we have a God who cares. He sends His rain, the Bible tells us, on the just and on the unjust. Even for those in this world tonight who have no knowledge of God, they don't know that God exists, they don't know that they have a duty that they need to fulfill toward God, God is still doing things in their lives. He is still providing things for them every day. And they're unaware of the source of those blessings. They're unaware of who it is that makes the sun rise in the morning and who it is that presides over its setting in the evening, if you use that accommodative language. And who it is that orders the seasons. And who it is that is in control of all sorts of phenomenon that occur naturally in the world of which we're a part. We live in a world that is broken, and it has been broken since the first human beings decided to go it on their own and ignore God's will. When sin entered this world, sin changed this world. It changed this world from a pristine paradise in which God placed man to have everything that he could possibly ever want or need into a place that was going to become spiritually a barren desert when men turned their back on God. And when their sin brought things into the world that prior to it was not there, Adam and Eve brought death into this world. Death comes through sickness, and death comes through violence, and death comes through a number of neglects that human beings perpetrate toward one another. And it's been that way since the very beginning. Even the very first family had to deal with the consequences of sin in their own family when one brother killed another and introduced death into the world. Adam and Eve's first experiences with human death had to be with a child of their own. Think about all of those kinds of things that they had to learn, and nobody they could even turn to. No older generation they could ask about who had experienced this before them. They just knew that sin had come into the world because they had defied God. And because they defied and disobeyed God, they brought these things upon themselves. And then death passed to all men because all men have sinned, the book of Romans tells us. So that's been our predicament, and it is our predicament tonight. And when we look at the world around us, what is happening in our world is not just mere chance. What is happening in our world is not just something that's an anomaly. It's always been a part of human existence on this planet. As I said, our little perspective, it may very well be. We've never seen anything like it. But if the world should stand another 2,000 years, there's no telling what a subsequent generation from our own may witness. These are just things that happen. These are things that occur. They're frightening to us because we've never dealt with them. We don't know exactly what to do about it. We're still learning about this contagion and what it may be and what it may do and how it may migrate and what trajectory it may take. We don't know about a lot of things connected to it that we'd like to know that we probably will learn, maybe the hard way. But I'm here to tell you tonight that our God is in control. And our God knows what's taking place in this universe. And this universe, this earth of which we are a part, was never intended to be a place after the sin of man where everything was going to be sorrowless and where there were no tears and where there was no suffering. Revelation chapter 21 points us to paradise being restored. If those early chapters of Genesis show us that we lost our paradise through sin, and we did, then those last couple of chapters in the book of Revelation, chapters 21 and 22, point to a time when the paradise will be restored, where God will wipe away all the tears from men's eyes, and where there will be no more pain, and there'll be no more suffering, and there'll be no more death. That's not what's supposed to happen on planet Earth. That's what heaven is for. That's what heaven is all about, a place where God's sovereignty is totally respected and there is no one there who practices any sin whatsoever, as Revelation 21 and verse 8 would tell us. And so we're living in a historic time. We're living in a time where perspective makes a difference as to how we deal with the things that are going on around us. But you know, we're not the first group of Christians that have had calamities to befall them in a wholesale way. We're not protected from the things that go on in this world simply because we're children of God, although we have a God to whom we can pray, and as we pray tonight, we can ask for His protection. But we do recognize that we get sick. We've had enough sickness in this church in recent months to make us all recognize that we're not immune to what everybody else falls prey to in terms of human illness and sickness out there in the world. But I will tell you that when you open your New Testament, you will find that there were instructions sometimes given to Christians that were in circumstances that were difficult and suffering that they had to endure living on planet Earth that might have made them wonder whether or not God cared or whether God was in control. And, you know, when I think about the fact that there were early Christians who were actually persecuted for their faith, we all might sit back, and many have sat back over the years and wondered, well, of all things that God should protect His people from, shouldn't He have protected them from those that would have persecuted them because of their belief in Him? I mean, I'll take the sickness, I'll take the death, I'll take the other things that come along, but surely when a man signs on to be a disciple of Jesus Christ, that should isolate and insulate him from ever having to suffer because of his faith. Doesn't that make perfect sense to you and me? Yeah, it does. And yet, what's the Bible's record about that? The Bible's record is that people who were the most faithful were sometimes those who suffered the most at the hands of those who hated their Lord and hated them because they loved the Lord and hated them because of the things that they were doing. The Apostle Peter wrote a letter, the book of 1 Peter, if you'll flip over there to that text with me. And in this letter, he had to prepare the hearts and minds of Christians for hard times. He had to try to do something that would get them ready for the suffering that they were going to experience. And this suffering took on physical forms. It wasn't just emotional suffering or mental pain or spiritual challenge, although those things were involved. But in some instances, there were people who were really going to be threatened physically. Their lives were going to be put on the line because of their faith. And in the third chapter of the book of 1 Peter, in verse 16, here is what the apostle wrote to these beleaguered people. He said, "You keep a good conscience so that in the thing in which you are slandered, those who revile your good behavior in Christ will be put to shame." One of the toughest things I think Christians had to endure outside of somebody actually trying to take their physical life away from them were the slanders that were perpetrated against them. The things people said about them. You know, it is not true that sticks and stones may break our bones, but words will never hurt us, right? Do words hurt? They do hurt. And sometimes words hurt in ways that it would not have hurt nearly as bad if somebody just taken a stick to you. I mean, after they've beaten you with a stick, you may be a little sore afterwards, but you're going to get better. And the pain is eventually going to stop. But sometimes the words, the slanders, the reports that are given about us that are not true are the things that linger because people believe things that are not true. And Peter is saying to these people that you've got to hold on to your good conscience so that when you are slandered, that those who are reviling your good behavior will be put to shame. In chapter 4, look at what he has to say in verse 12. He said, "Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal among you, which comes upon you for your testing, as though some strange thing were happening to you." If you'd been a Christian in Peter's experience, you might have been someone who, when these things began to happen to you, you'd say, "This isn't supposed to happen to me. I'm a child of God. I'm not supposed to have these kinds of problems. I belong to the Creator. I've acknowledged that He exists. I believe in the Sovereign. Why should these things be happening to me?" He said, it's not a strange thing that fiery ordeals beset Christians, that Christians find themselves having to be subjected to these horrifically painful experiences. In the 14th verse, the same chapter, he informed them there that they would be reviled because they were believers. He said, "If you are reviled for the name of Christ, you are blessed because the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you." And then in verse 16, he in fact said, "If anyone suffers as a Christian, he is not to be ashamed, but he is to glorify God in this matter." There were just a number of times in chapters 3 and 4 where Peter spoke of the suffering that Christians especially were going to endure as citizens of planet Earth. I don't know about you, but that's not the kind of information that I want young Christians to hear immediately. Do you? Young Christians sometimes are the most vulnerable. I know that's the case because even us older Christians are vulnerable to this kind of thing. And if those who've been at it for a while have a hard time dealing with it, what should we expect will happen with those who are infants in the faith? We don't enjoy giving people bad news. We don't enjoy saying to them, "Look, the prospects are not good, that I've had this experience and you may have that experience." It's hard to give people those kinds of bad news. But Peter was trying his best to prepare them for suffering, to prepare them for things that were going to be unpleasant. And he reminded them, back in chapter 1, of the enormous blessings that they had received. And this is something we've got to keep in mind. Yes, we may be going through some crises right now that are unprecedented, but just think of all the great things that have happened to us up to this point that we probably took for granted. We've taken for granted that you could just do anything you wanted to do without worrying about getting sick, or we've been able to go to the grocery store and buy all the toilet paper we wanted to buy. And we've been to the grocery store and if you needed some Purell, you didn't have to worry about where you'd find that. Think of all those times you'd just load up your basket with all these things that today have become short supply. And think about all the days you've gotten up to go to work, complaining about having to go to work. Now they tell you don't come. And now your children, you know, are going to be off another week and maybe a month, maybe 2 months. We don't know where this thing is going to go. I tell you, every day there's going to be some new policy, some new decision made. And we're going to have to be flexible enough to roll with that. And we're going to have to do what needs to be done to protect our families, to protect ourselves, so that we can serve the Lord and serve the needs of other people. But Peter reminded them of how blessed they had been up to this point where they began to suffer. Look at verse 3 of 1 Peter 1. He said, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to His great mercy has caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead." Wow, that's the supreme blessing that just not everybody in the world has. But you and I have been begotten to that living hope, born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus. It's all according to the mercy that we've received from God in the past. So if we've received the mercies of God, should we not also expect that there are going to be some challenges from the devil? That there are going to be some things that the evil one is going to perpetrate against people that have been so blessed to try to get them to deny the very God who has given them so much? Look at verse 4. "We have something that we have obtained, an inheritance which is imperishable, an inheritance which is undefiled, that will not fade away, that has been reserved in heaven for us." People are all distressed over the markets. Nobody's ever seen anything happen in the markets. Everybody that's got a 401k is worried sick because they've watched their money just dry up, and that's probably going to mean some changes in plans and some things about what their future is going to be, at least temporarily, until we find out where it's going to be. Of course, everybody's in the same boat. We can take some comfort, I suppose, in that. But just think about the fact that you and I have been given as a result of a blessing which God has placed upon us to have an imperishable, undefiled inheritance that will not fade away. It's reserved in heaven for us. We can rejoice in that. Your neighbors are sitting at home without that hope whatsoever. They can't even think about what's going to happen to them once this life is over, or if they should succumb to some disease. And yet we have a hope. We have something reserved. We have something that won't fade. We have something that will never be lost because God's in control of that. God's the one who dispenses that. God has prepared that for His people. And then look at verse 5. "We are protected," He says, "by the power of God through faith for a salvation that's ready to be revealed in the last time." If anything has been learned by people in our world of late, it's that what you think was certain may not be certain. But we have God's protection with our salvation. We have something, again, that the unregenerated in our world just simply do not have. And then if you look at verses 6 through 9, He said, "In this," these things we've just spoken of, "we greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you've been distressed." Now this is what I'm trying to do with us tonight. Start off by recognizing, yes, we're in a period of distress. The world is full of fearful people that are just terrified of what's awaiting them out there. And again, we don't know what's awaiting us. But I will tell you that we rejoice because for a little while here, it looks as if it's necessary that we're going to be distressed. And we're going to be distressed by, He just calls it various trials. He can't even name the trials. It's just going to be different things. We can't even put a finger on exactly what it is you may have to experience. But He says whatever it is that you have to experience is something that is going to help prove your faith. Look at verse 7. He says you're experiencing these things for a little while. You're distressed by various trials so that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold which is perishable, even though it is tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. So He told them that anything that happened to them was only going to show whether or not they really had faith in their God and whether they believed in their salvation. Now, those are things we can't let go of. And thank God, He's holding on to those things for us so nobody can rob us of them. Now, you can give that away if you want to. It's yours, and you can throw it out the window if that's what you choose to do. And God is not going to make you have that confidence. He's not going to insist beyond your own will that you are going to hold on to these promises. If you get fearful and if you get to be distressed and the world is making a strong case to you and you just decide you want to be as crazy as everybody else, then do it. But if you don't worry. God's holding on to those promises. And He is making these things sure, and He's making these things steadfast. And we are proving whether or not we are people of faith who believe in our salvation. He reminds them in verses 13 and 14 of the commitment that they once made. And all of us tonight are companions in a commitment that we made to the Lord Jesus Christ. Look at verse 13. He says, "Therefore, prepare your minds for action. Gird up the loins of your minds. Keep sober in spirit. Fix your hope completely on the grace to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And as obedient children, do not be conformed to the former lusts which were yours in your ignorance." Are you behaving like ignorant people? Are you behaving like people that don't know God? Those who know God behave differently than those that don't know Him. And it's when going gets tough and things get to be dire that those who have faith are recognizable. And it's going to be very important for all of us to do that, right? When I read these passages, I recognize, I don't know what all the trials they experienced were. I know what some of them were, but I don't know what the various trials were. But I know this, they were saying something about their confidence in their God based on how they responded to those trials. Based on what they were doing with each other and what they were doing with those who were around them. Well, I'm not going to belabor this and take more time than necessary tonight. We could go through the entire book of 1 Peter and find reminders of these very principles over and over again. I would hate to have the responsibility that Peter had to write a letter to Americans today about how to deal with the trials that you're dealing with, because in the first place, most of them would say, "Man, get real. You know, you're all talking about eternity and you're talking about heaven and you're talking about what happens after this life. We're talking about tomorrow. We want to know what's going to happen tonight." Well, it's kind of interesting that the Bible has a different calendar than we have. The Bible has 2 days on its calendar. Today, today. That's all that's on the Bible's calendar. Today and that day. That day meaning the return of the Lord, the judgment that the world is coming to. "Oh, I don't know what this world is coming to." I'll tell you what it's coming to. It's coming to judgment. That's what it's coming to. Is this a part of a judgment that God is issuing on our world? I don't know. Now, you're probably going to hear people say that. There'll probably be people in pulpits that'll be proclaiming that loudly, and there'll be a lot of people that'll listen to that. But as far as I know, God has not spoken to me or anyone else to tell me that this is something He's doing to planet Earth. But what I know is that there is going to come a time when judgment will be brought upon all men. And so we get worried about all the things that are going to happen, but the Bible is about today. Today. Because there is no promise of tomorrow. And it's all about that day. It's about the eternity that awaits us. The judgment, the last day that we are here on this earth. And so I hope that all of us understand that we're up against a great obstacle trying to talk to people about faith. But I believe that there are probably some folks that in this ordeal may listen to people of faith for maybe the first time. You'll probably get some questions you've never gotten from people that you probably never expected would care. And you need to respond appropriately so that they recognize that you're not like the rest of the faithless in the world, but you're among the faithful who believe in our God. Peter reminded these people that the wisest approach to escaping harm was for them to just keep on doing good, to just zealously do good. He admitted that sometimes even though you do good, people won't appreciate it, and that people will sometimes malign you, and they will sometimes slander you, as I've said. But Peter told them that they should not let fear intimidate them and trouble them, and that they should seat Jesus Christ on the throne of their hearts and always be ready, he said, to give an answer to those who ask you concerning the hope that is within you with meekness and fear, with respect for God and with humility, because you recognize that we're not in control, but God is in control. And so we answer appropriately in that way, and we be ready when those that are hurting ask us how we can be calm, how we can be serene when all these kinds of things are happening to us. Most of us are grieved when tragedies strike us. Most of us are greatly distressed whenever difficulties come. And as a group, we don't often do things well. We don't do a lot of things well. We make mistakes all the time. We're not perfect people. We don't do family well. Not perfectly. We don't do closeness well. We don't do church well. We don't do crises well. We don't do tragedy well. We don't do sickness well. Sometimes we don't do dying well. There's fear among Christians. There are Christians who don't act appropriately in all those situations. And believe it or not, the world can point to you and point out when you make a mistake and when you do things that you ought not do. But what we need to do is just be faithful. Do the best that we can to be prudent and to be wise. Not do foolish things. Listen to what the authorities are telling us. Make decisions based on what's best for people. But recognize that God is in control. And that in His due course, these sorts of things will pass. They usually do. And just be ready for whatever the duration of those particular things may be. Because the real problem that most people have right now is that they just don't feel like they're in control. And we like to feel like we're in control. That brings on a fear and a panic that spreads very rapidly. And we hope that people can learn to do better. We hope that we can set the pace and do better ourselves. Would you this evening come to Christ and come confessing your faith in Him as Lord, as Sovereign, as the One who rules heaven and earth? The Lord has a kingdom over which He reigns and rules, and He will continue to reign and rule over this kingdom until He delivers it back to His Father and gives total control to His Father after the last enemy is destroyed, and that's death, 1 Corinthians chapter 15 tells us. And so Jesus is very much on His throne, very much in control, and He wants to be in control of the throne of your heart. He wants to rule over your life and give you someone to rely upon and to depend upon as He sets the pace for life for you. If you're here this evening and you need to confess your faith in Him and be baptized, we'd be glad to help you do that before we leave the assembly tonight. And if you're a child of God and in need of the prayers of your brethren, let that be known as well as we stand and as we sing.